Good morning and welcome back. I'm Heather Caro.
And it is great to have Heather Caro back at the Abbey. Welcome back, Heather.
It's always good to be here.
Yeah, we're here at the Abbey of the Hills in northeast South Dakota, not too far away from Watertown, South Dakota, where our next guest is part of the Mother of God Monastery, Sister Teresa Wolf. Welcome, Sister.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And I'm glad to have you back. It's been years since we've had you on the radio, and
yes.
We need to make it more frequent.
Yes.
Because you talk about a very important topic, and that is not always necessary for little ears.
Yeah.
So if you have little ears listening, you may want to find another activity for them, because it is going to be a little bit sensitive, but also very important stuff that we're going to be talking about next, and that's human trafficking. So, Sister, tell us a little bit about who you are and your experience on how you got into being an advocate against human trafficking.
Well, as a sister of Mother of God Monastery, my first years were spent in teaching, like almost every sister's, and then I expressed an interest in doing more pastoral work, so I spent time on the reservation in Arizona, on the Papago Reservation, and with pastoral work, and I spent some time in foreign missions, and when I returned from working in Guatemala and Peru, I asked if I could continue working with Spanish-speaking people, because I didn't want to learn the language that I had worked so hard to learn, Spanish. So I've continued to work with Hispanic ministry, and when I was working in the Diocese of Madison, Wisconsin, I first heard about human trafficking. And it was trafficking of immigrants, because immigrants are very vulnerable because they don't know the language, they don't know their rights. They thought sometimes they were being offered a job, and actually they were pushed into being trafficked. And so as I became aware of that, and for women it was mostly being sex trafficked, and for either men or women, it was the danger of being labor trafficked. And so I wanted to learn more about this and what I could do to prevent this. And so I took advantage of trainings and workshops and of learning about what is this terrible thing. I had never heard of it.
Right.
It's terrible evil that's not just in Wisconsin and was not just with immigrants, but it's a worldwide phenomenon.
So give us a time context, Sister. When was that you were in Wisconsin and you started diving in?
That was about 15 or 20 years ago.
Okay.
And so when I was asked to return to South Dakota to work at the Benedictine Multicultural Center, I thought, this is important that we continue this kind of work. And it took a while, because then, 15 years ago and now, the majority of people deny that it's happening.
Right.
I think from what I read, up to 80% of the population doesn't believe human trafficking is happening.
Well, they it might be happening, but not here.
Yes, exactly.
That's their attitude.
Yes, it could never be happening in South Dakota, and for sure not in my neighborhood.
Right.
And people have told that to me. Well, it's not happening in Watertown, and it's not happening in my neighborhood, that's for sure. And I thought, little do you know.
Why do you think people think that? It's not because they are angry and evil and whatnot. Why do they have that attitude that it's not happening here?
I think we all like to believe that we are good people, good Christian people especially, and that we don't have anybody in our midst that is that evil, or that people are suffering that much in our midst. Because we think, well, surely we would know, we would help that person. And because human trafficking is very present, but it's oftentimes hidden, it's not obvious.
Yeah.
You know, they talk about hidden in plain sight.
Yeah, they do.
And so it's happening in Watertown, but because we don't see it, and a victim doesn't talk to us about it, we insist it's not happening because nobody wants that kind of evil in our midst.
Yeah. So where have you witnessed it happening? You know, Heather referenced that it's Watertown's kind of a hub.
Yes.
Where do you see that occurring, and what? How does it manifest itself in the Watertown area?
Well, I know I have talked personally with victims, mm-hmm. and one woman who lives in Watertown, has a job, has children, and she told me that she was at Walmart shopping, and she thought she recognized one of the Johns, or the traffickers,
yep.
And she was so frightened, she said she threw down her things in the store and ran home, took her children into the house, locked the door, and pulled the drapes.
Hmm.
Because her trafficker was at large, even though she has reported it and her case is pending. But cases, because of the backlog and because of the thoroughness of the investigations that must be done to bring about a conviction, that the trafficker is free to roam the streets of Watertown and continue victimizing other people.
Huh. Well, and I think, too, a little bit to your question, Deacon, is that when I had you on the last time, I was shocked, and I want to spend quality time on this. We mm-hmm. have 5 minutes to our next break, but we're going to keep you through the break, and okay. So I want the conversation to continue. But what trafficking actually looks like, because I don't know that people who are actually being trafficked know they're being trafficked, and I don't know that we as lay people know what to look for, know what it is, mm-hmm. how it's defined, because we're imagining small children, you know, in mm-hmm. Mexico,
yeah.
right?
Yes.
And so I want to spend time on that. So can we get started on that
okay.
discussion?
Okay. Well, human trafficking is an international crime. It's owning and selling somebody. And it's an international crime. It's illegal in every country in the world, and it's happening in every country in the world. And there are various kinds of human trafficking. The most common we know of are sex trafficking and labor trafficking. There's also trafficking of children for organs, trafficking for work in circuses, for underage marriages. Trafficking for pornography, which is connected with trafficking and is increasing rapidly in our country, especially child pornography. I mean, it gets worse and worse, uglier and uglier.
Yeah.
And for trafficking, the victim has all dignity taken away. It's basically so bought and sold as a commodity. It's a money-making. The person becomes a money-making object. And it's human slavery in the fact that the person has no rights, no dignity, and many times has no recourse for help mm-hmm. because of fear or control by the trafficker. And it can look like in Watertown, for example, it can look like in the middle of the night or in the late evening, if you stop at one of the truck stops and you look around a little bit and you see a scantily clad teenage girls knocking on the door, on the cab door of a truck, you know, mm-hmm. and the trucker will open it and she goes in the truck.
Mm-hmm.
And this can happen all night long.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one way. That's one way it looks like.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's not always the runaways either.
No.
Because it can happen in your own home.
Yes. We talk about familial trafficking when families traffic their children or teenagers. As I said, this is a very ugly crime. Mm-hmm. and it's prevalent, and it's growing, it's increasing. And so, like girls, high school girls, for example, may continue to go to school. They show up like always, and then after school, maybe their so-called boyfriend picks them up and takes them to maybe to the motel or wherever where they do their business. Mm-hmm. And that goes on all through high school, and nobody knows it, not even the girl's parents.
If you're just tuning in, we're having a very serious discussion with Sister Teresa Ann Wolfe. She talks about human trafficking in the whole world, but mm-hmm. specifically here in our local area. It's a tough discussion to hear. It's a tough discussion to think about, but it's one that we absolutely need to think about. So we're going to take a quick break, and Sister Ann, we're going to continue this discussion on the other side. So just a reminder, Sister Ann will be back, and we do have very sensitive information we're talking about, so maybe little ears might want to do another activity at this time. But we'll be back with more Real Presence Live right after this.
Stay with us. There's more Real Presence Live to come on the Real Presence Radio Network.
Daily Meditations of Pope Benedict XVI, presented by Leonardo Di Filippis of St. Luke Productions.
What the Magi learned. Going into the house, the Magi saw the child. Outwardly, their journey was now over. But at this point, a new journey began for them, which changed their whole lives. Deep within themselves, they felt prompted to go in search of the true justice that can only come from God, and they wanted to serve this king, to fall prostrate at his feet, and to play their part in the renewal of the world. This was where their inner journey began. It started at the very moment when they knelt down before this child and recognized him as the promised king. But they still had to assimilate these joyful gestures internally. They had to change their ideas about power, about God, and about man, and in so doing, they also had to change themselves. They had to learn to give themselves. No lesser gift would be sufficient for this king. But they had to learn that their lives must be conformed to this divine way of exercising power, to God's own way of being. They must become men of truth, of justice, of goodness, of forgiveness, of mercy. They will have to ask, "How can I serve God's presence in the world?" They must learn to lose their life and in this way to find it. Having left Jerusalem behind, they must not deviate from the path marked out by the true King as they follow Jesus.
This meditation is taken from Benedictus, published by Ignatius Press and Magnificat, and produced by St. Luke Productions. Learn more at stlukeproductions.com.
You're listening to Real Presence Live. Now, back to more inspirational and uplifting stories and a look at the extraordinary things happening in our local area. Heard right here on the RPR Network.
Good morning and welcome back to Real Presence Live. I'm Heather Caro.
And this is Deacon Paul Trinan. They talk about the extraordinary things that are going on in our area. This is an extraordinarily, maybe evil thing that is occurring in our area that needs to be talked about. And I'm really, really proud of Real Presence Radio that they're willing to take this on, because it's a big deal.
It is a big deal, and we don't want to be silent anymore. Sister Teresa Ann Wolfe is here, and she's talking about human trafficking and how it exists in our local areas. And I'm using plural areas because we cover 10 dioceses, 5 states. It's happening in your area. Talk a little bit about why Watertown. Why is that a hub?
Well, it's because of the interstate and the intersection of the Interstate 29, I-29, and 212. Interstate I-29 comes all the way down from Canada, all the way down south, and Highway 212, well, that means you can transport trafficking victims all the way from Minneapolis all the way out west.
Wow.
To Sturgis for the bike rally or whatever, and beyond.
Well, and there's a lot of events that happen in our areas that bring in sex trafficking. And you mentioned Sturgis. What's another big one?
Okay, pheasant hunting season. And also we are in close proximity to a Native American reservation at Sisseton. And Native Americans are very vulnerable to sex trafficking, especially because of poverty and unemployment and isolation.
Yeah.
And also, like in South Dakota, well, in the Watertown is part of this, like 40% of the the known victims of sex trafficking are Native American women and children.
Oh.
You know, and Native Americans form, the entire Native American population forms less than 10% of this state.
Oh.
So this is a
that
real
is sad.
Yes.
So let's talk about we're now aware. What are some things that we can be looking for as just lay people? How can we help?
Yes. Well, that is important, and that's where most of the help comes from, because people can be aware of the red flags or the signs when something is wrong. One of them is malnourishment and signs of fatigue and bruises. So if you see a high school girl that all at once falls asleep during her classes, and she has all kinds of bruises on her arms, okay, that watch, be careful. Especially if the person is fearful, nervous, or depressed. And she wears inappropriate sexualized clothing. You know, like the scanty clothing at the truck stop.
Mm-hmm.
Or talking about going to parties when the clothing is not at all appropriate. New or unusual tattoos or branding. Like, a lot of kids have tattoos nowadays. But
yeah.
Unusual tattoos, especially things like barcodes on the neck, which denote that the trafficker owns this is his property.
Whoa.
Scarring, cigarette burns, because that's a way to keep people under control, is to hurt them with cigarettes. You know, you do this, or this is going to happen to you. Evidence of being controlled, when somebody will say, well, no, I can't go to church with you because my friend needs my help, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or a young girl with an older boyfriend. You know, 15-year-old girl, a 13-year-old girl with a 30-year-old boyfriend, that definitely is a red flag. Mm-hmm. Watch that, you know. And a change in personality or in studies or in habits or in friends. All at once, this girl, your neighbor girl, doesn't come to the church activities anymore. And she has a whole new group of friends that she's always hanging out with.
Mm-hmm.
And she always says, well, you know, this is boring. We got more exciting things to do. And then especially if they go for the weekend with friends or whatever, you know, and she'll say, and a lot of lying is involved. Or she'll tell her parents, well, I'm going to the fiesta in Minneapolis with my friend and her parents. And a bunch of us girls are going, and we're going to be leaving Friday afternoon and come back, Sunday evening sometime, you know. And her parents never check that out.
Yeah.
You know. And so that kind of change evasive.
At one point you had said gifts.
Yes. Oh, yes. yes, watch that. If a girl that comes from a rather poor family, or all at once she has cell phones and designer purses and new clothes and boots And you ask her, oh, my friend gave them to me. You know, I've got this, you know, this new boyfriend, and he's just giving me lots of gifts because he says I'm so wonderful. You know, and then in talks of talking about my friend says he can get a job for me. Or my friend that says, I'm pretty enough to be a model, and he's going to get a modeling job for me over the weekend or whatever, you know. Those kind of things. And then when they're into it, because of fear and threats, they don't say anything. So, for example, one way that girls fall into this very easily is through online friends in chat room, you know. And so this friend who poses as maybe a 15-year-old boy is really 29 years old and befriends this person and says, you know, and it convinces the girl to send nude photos, which are all the rage now. I mean, people do that all the time, I guess. You know, and so she sends a few. Well, he wants something more explicit, then nude, then something else. And if she doesn't, then there's threats that, you know, I'm going to show these to your parents and send them to your church. And if you don't do this, something bad's going to happen to your little sister. You know, and then out of shame and fear, the victim just gives in and sends more and more. And gets worse and worse, and there's no escape, you know. And so the girl will think, okay, okay, if I send you this one last picture, okay, you'll leave me alone.
No.
No, it never happens. It never happens.
It so you see worse. You see a girl that you're concerned about. You might be a teacher. You might be the parent of a friend, one of your kids' friends, even maybe one of your own children. How do we approach them? What can we do to help them?
I think to reassure them that whatever trouble they are in, whatever problems they have, that they can tell you. And that you will not scold or punish, that you will help, and that you will find the means for them to get out of this, no matter what they promised or no matter what was threatened.
Right.
And that they can, there's always help. And that parents will not punish them, no matter, you know, and that to say, if you're in trouble, tell me. You don't need, you know, don't let shame stop you. We will help you. And if you can't, if you absolutely cannot talk to me as your parent, talk to a friend. Talk to grandma. In one place where I was talking to the group, and there was a meeting at the school, and all the parents had to attend. So all the grandmas came with the high school kids, you know. And as we talked with this I said, you know, when we talked about shame based and fearing, and I said, okay, grandmas, can any of these high school kids talk to you about anything? And you're not going to scold them. And the other grandmother said, yes, anybody, any. They turned around and said to the high school kids, any of you can talk to any of us, and we will help you. Because kids do not want to talk to, they're too ashamed to share things with parents sometimes. But kids will talk to grandma.
Isn't that interesting?
You know? And that's one way, because we want to help them, and they need to step forward. And so sometimes if they're too ashamed to talk to their priest or the the religious education director or whoever, but if at least if they can begin with grandma, and then grandma knows what to do, because that is crucial, that we can help the victims, the young victims, the girls especially.
Well, we're running out of time with Sister Teresa Ann Wolf. Sister, you also had told us during the break and that you're willing to come out and speak to CCD classes, to schools, different places, right?
Yes.
Because I think this message needs to spread locally. So if people are interested in contacting you to get more information on how maybe you could come and speak to their group, how would they get a hold of you?
They can call me. My phone number is 605-868-6464.
Okay. And you don't mind if we make that public?
No.
Because it just went public. So, and if you need any information, feel free to call Real Presence Radio, too. We can get you in contact with Sister. Deacon, you had a good website that...
Yeah, there's another line. I sat in on a talk like this, and I can't remember. But one of the things that I took from it is that we all have a part to play. And sometimes you see these things in the most... unexpected areas. Yeah. I remember driving through and seeing it wasn't a truck stop, it was just an off-ramp, seeing something that kind of haunts me still, going, was that a human trafficking thing? And basically what was given to me was the phone number for the National Human Trafficking Hotline.
Yes.
National Human Trafficking Hotline. And it was stressed, put this into your cell phone. So people that are listening that want to do something, here's that number. It's 888-373-7888. Again, 888-373-7888. National Human Trafficking. And put it in there, and if you see something, boom.
Yes.
Act.
Yes. If you see something, say something.
Yeah.
All right, Sister, thank you for joining us and sharing more about this important topic. Up next on Real Presence Live, Father Christopher Hughes from over in Kranzberg, South Dakota, joins us in studio as we talk about a special devotion that everyone should consider. We'll return in just a couple of minutes.
This is Real Presence Live, where the focus is not on the evil around us, but on conversion and mercy through the good news that is always good. We're local, engaging, and live on the Real Presence Radio Network. Searching for more great Catholic content? Visit our website at realpresenceradio.com. Find Catholic news you can trust, information about events coming up in the local area, and the latest on what's happening at the RPR Network. And don't forget that you can listen to any of our stations around the clock from anywhere in the world. Need prayers for someone or something in your life? You can submit those through our online form for the entire family to pray for. Real Presence Radio, your family of faith and hope. Online at realpresenceradio.com.
This is Lavinia Spirito for Catholic Way Bible Study. St. John Paul II called for a new evangelization, an act of love meant to reintroduce all the faithful to the love of Jesus Christ. This act of love has never been more urgent. In his work, The Judgment of Nations, historian Richard Dawson notes, "The hope of the world rests in the last resort on the existence of a spiritual nucleus of believers who are bearers of the seed of unity. If we have faith in the power of the Spirit, we must believe that even these evils can be conquered. For the powers of the world are blind powers which are working in the dark. They are powerless against that Spirit who is the Lord and giver of life, and against those higher powers of spiritual understanding and love which are the essential gifts of the Holy Spirit. The battle for the world is first and foremost spiritual. Are you ready for battle today?"
Catholic Way Bible Study. Peace, power, purpose. Find out more at cwbs.org.
Did you know you can listen to Real Presence Live anytime on any podcast platform? Just search for Real Presence Radio on platforms such as Spotify, Apple Music, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and on the Real Presence Radio website. Then subscribe so you don't miss any future shows. If you like what you hear, give us a good rating so other people can find us as well. Real Presence Radio, your family of faith and hope.